Accession number 846. Mrs. Sarah Davidson, Reel 1.
You were only a small child when the First World War began.
Yes.
What can you remember of the war?
Oh, I remember so well. I can picture the country cottage we lived in at the time. And my father, because he was unaware, because he was called up for war, you see. And I remember there was all this excitement, how the war is going to be a war and all that sort. And then the next thing I can remember so well, because in the country we had long garden paths leading down the house and the white wicket gate. I can remember going up to the gate and the people was there and the women were crying and all that. And a lot of the men had got their papers to go to war and all that sort of thing. And I can remember our village green where we used to skate. There's a long pond along the green and a village pump. And we used to go and get our pump and just slide on this and play our skipping ropes and all and a game around this ball and all on this village green, spin a top and all sorts of things. And I can remember the green coming out and in such a clutter coming down the road, and when I looked up there was a terrific lot of horses with field guns, you know, all the, because in those days they fought on the battlefield with bayonets. They didn't have air like they have today in nuclear warfare, did they? That was the long artillery, all the big guns coming along, and then the big field kitchens, and hundreds of troops, all with their bright khaki and their bright shiny buttons and their rifles. I was frightened, because I remember, you know, and my mum and all of them stand at the gate, seeing these all coming along, and I used to hide behind their apron, because in those days they always wore big aprons with long skirts and big aprons, and I can remember hiding behind their apron because I was frightened in a way, and yet I wanted to see it. And I think that when they put on our village green, they'd been marching for so long, and where they come from, Colchester or where, but they'd been marching so long, they stayed overnight. In fact, I think they stayed 2 days on our village green, but I can't be accurate about that. But I know they were there a long time, because we used to run the shop when we got used to them and get them there. Penny packet of Woodbine cigarettes, and they'd give us a penny for going, and we felt, oh, that's, we only hope, you know, we all sort of queued up for them, saying that's on errands. And then they stopped, and they had the big cookhouse, their big field kitchens going, the smell of their food was delicious, and the troops had their tin plates and their mug eating, and they were so kind, us little kiddies in the village. Oh, they were, well, I suppose they knew war, perhaps the fathers never come back anyway. And to me, that was such a wonderful thing. I was so sorry when they went. Is in the sea, all this wonderful brightness and the beautiful horses and all that gloom. Well, then they marched off, and of course we saw the mothers, you know, they used to pick up the apron and wipe their eyes and thought, whatever they crying for? They're so lovely, you know, that's because I was so young then, you see. And then Father, I know he got his papers. I'd already had two of my cousins gone, Archie and Wilford, my two big cousins, which was much older than me. That's on my granny's, you know, my aunt's boys. And they'd gone off to war, and Dad had his papers come. And he'd got, in those days, he had it come, he had to walk from, where was it, a place called Brockley in those days, a country village about 7 miles outside here. And he'd got his papers to walk to Cockfield Station, which was about, I mean, it's 9 or 12 miles, because I can see him setting off the day he went, across the allotments, cutting a shortcut to the station, about 12, and they walked it. And Mum waved goodbye and that, and she said, well, now you children, she said, you must behave yourselves. You've got no father to look after you now. She said, you must behave yourselves and be good children, you see, and all that sort of thing. I can remember that so well. And we thought at first, well, that was nice, because we hadn't got Dad at home, because if you did anything wrong in those days, it was always a strap. That was old-fashioned, but always a leather strap. It wasn't meant to hit the children with, but in those days they had what they called cutthroat razors, a long razor, and they used to sharpen it every morning when they shaved. They sharpened it, well, in those days in the field work, they shaved it once a week, but they all shaved. And you see, that was used to strap. And if you really did anything what you should be chastised for, Father, get that strap and he'll give you one hit across it. And my word. And then if you were misbehaving yourself at the table, and he said, because we either sat with our hands behind our hands on your lap. You never had your elbows on the table. You wouldn't think of touching your meal till your mother and father had sat down. And if you start talking at the table, if Father would just look at you and you'd glance this strap, my word, that was enough. That's why they should be more, I think they should use a cane at school and that sort of thing. But they're not, they don't chastise the children enough. There's not enough discipline today. And we lived in fear that we'd got to be good, you know. It never did us any harm.
I mean, at the time, what did you think your father was doing overseas?
Oh, I didn't know. He'd just gone, and Mum She had a letter from, and she had a paper. She used to go and draw the money from the post office, the army allowance or whatever they had. And then, oh, he couldn't have been away a few months, and he came home because my father lost an eye. And he came home because of losing that eye. He was, well, they sent him home from the army anyway. And, of course, the mother was so thrilled then. Of course, he went back to his work as a road foreman. And then, unfortunately, see, he had this accident and got killed. Not an accident. Well, it was an accident, but this bull tossed him and killed him. He lost his life for the sake of the bull.
What about Zeppelin raids during the
First
World War?
Oh, yes, I can remember coming out, and while the war was on, we'd all gone to bed. And, of course, we had candles and paraffin lamps. We didn't have no electricity in those days. And Mother came in, and she put the lamp out. And she said, now, you children, we were in bed, as a matter of fact. She came upstairs, and that woke us up. Oh, some reason, I don't know why, but I know my two elder sisters went down. Well, being nosy, of course, I go down too. And all the women are outside in the yard, standing out in the yard, you see. It's absolutely very dark black night. And so we went round, and all the lights were out, the lamps were out, and they said, don't you make a noise. And so I was watching. I could see this settlement, like a great big cloud to me going past, you see. And I was watching this settlement overhead. And my sister then walked in the house, and I said, I can't stand out here. And isn't that what? Who wants to see that? You see, you're so innocent. Who wants to see that? And of course, I went back to bed. But,
did your mother explain to you what it was?
Oh, yes. She said that was the settlement. She said we're quite all right now. She said, but we could have all been killed. Yes, she said, that's war. That's why the fathers have all gone away. But she said, you children are too young. You don't want to know anything about those sort of things. You're far too young to know anything about that. Yes.
Did your father ever tell you any of his experiences overseas in the war?
No, because he was only in the war a short time, you see. No.
Unfortunately, he died when you were about 9 years old, I think.
Yes, I don't know whether I could have been nine. I really can't think. I know I was very young.
How did that happen?
Well, father was coming home, and in those days, the cattle was driven from the markets along the roads. Today, they all take them away in vans. But, and this bull was mad. He was absolutely mad. And the man was shouting out to people as he came along, you know, the beware sort of thing. And as far as I know, this little girl was, my father picked a little girl up and put her over a gate. And the bull, as he was going to get hold of this little girl, because that was making for her, right, that caught my father in the arm. And pitched him right over on the stone heap. He went on the big gravel, Well, there wasn't gravel in the country house, it was big flints. And he went that, and from then on, I know, I can't remember too much, but I know twice a week, Mother used to walk to Barry Hospital, 7 miles, on Sundays and Wednesdays, and she used to push my little brother in the pram. And sometimes, on the Sunday, she would take me along with it. I used to walk in my little brown boots. I used to walk along to Barry, because we weren't allowed to go into hospital in those days, no children were. And then she would be up Monday morning off doing going off to do the washing and get us off to school and go off and do the washing. And then, of course, when father was, within 6 months he died. First he had to have his hand off and then his arm, and the poison went into his system and he died. And that was all within the 6 months. And then, as far as I know, they sort of brought in, where compensation was concerned, that being 6 months, that was too long. He would have died ordinary or something, you know. That's how they wanged him out of the compensation. And so then, of course, being five of us in the family, Mother had to go on what they called the parish. And
who was this little girl? It wasn't one of your sisters.
No. I think that was a little girl that was staying in the village at the time. But I think she, an invalid, rather. Little fat girl. I think that's who my father was going to protect, this little girl. He was going up the street to put her over the gate, I know. And when the bull caught him, anyway. But, and then as I said, Mother had to go on the parish, which was a very hard thing to do. I know one of our uncles, Uncle Fred, he had a farm and he used to send us milk, you know, milk and that sort of thing. But anyway,
What could your mother do to earn money?
Well, she used to go 2 days a week. She used to go to a farmhouse and do all the washing. As I told you, she goes at 9 in the morning. She'd be back at 6 at night and for 2 shillings. And then I think that happened on a Monday and a Tuesday. I think it's 2 different farmhouses she went. But that was a quite a long walk she had to go. It wasn't on the doorstep. It was quite a long walk. And, of course, when we came here to school, we'd go to meet her, go down and to meet, you see, because heaven knows, Dad, your mother was everything to you. And my elder sister was out at service. My second elder sister, she sort of mothered us as much as best she could. She was like a little mother in herself to us. And then, in the harvest time, she would go picking stones. She was always out at work, but she just had to. The 7 and 6 to keep her was, she couldn't manage. And she had to go stone picking.
That's all right. Go on. Yes, but you can always change it later.
And
if you want.
She had to go stone picking. Well, then on Saturdays, when we was away in school, we'd go stone picking with Baba. And you walked up and down the fields with 2 buckets. And you picked up the stones and filled your buckets. Then when you got to the end of the field, you tipped them in a big heap. Then when you got back again, you tipped them in a big heap. And that was called stone picking. And they used to take it away in the big tumbrils. And perhaps at the end of the week, Mother might have earned 7 shillings. 5 shillings or 7 shillings. And, of course, being kiddies, we used to pick so hard, trying to help Mother fill her buckets up, you know. And then later on in the season, she went into the fields, cutting the tops off mangles and put them in a big heap. Frostbitten, I can see her coming home with a... absolutely frozen, all her legs and stockings and shoes. She was absolutely bitter cold. And then she would light the fire up, you know, and cook us children our supper. And then she'd be up next morning and off again, and she had a very, very hard life indeed. And I hope no one ever has to share that sort of life today.
You were still in school, of course, at that time.
Yes, and we was at school, yes. But we got on very well at school, for a country school. We got on, because in those days, you see, it's a pity it's not like that today. It was reading, writing and arithmetic, the 3 main subjects. I mean, today, if you walk out, what do you see? Crowds of children walking around a park, or they're looking up at buildings. That's not going to get them anywhere in life. They want to go to school and they want to learn the main things. They want to be educated, reading, writing and arithmetic. Then in the afternoon, the girls would do sewing and darning, which is a big necessity, because Mother always used to say, there's no use you girls thinking getting married until you know how to cook and wash and sew. And she said, you'll make a good housewife, which is perfectly true. How many girls can do that today?
How long did you stop at school?
I think I was about 13 and a half, because I think my older sister must have left when she was about 12. But I think, because she was much older than me, and I'm being the youngest girl, you see, and I think I was about 13 and a half. Well, then I had my... it was like a wicker basket with a top on. You put all your clothes with a top on, that's called, and I had 2 straps around it, and then you go off into service. And from then on, you have your hair, which you've had round your shoulders. It's pinned up in a bun at the back of your head, and you, more or less, you're a young woman then. And you go off to service. And I know the first night I was away from home, and I cried for my mother. And I was up at 6 in the morning, and of course I'd been taught to work. I knew we had to work very hard. We had to keep our home spotless. And in those days, you know, there was all the knives and forks to be cleaned, and the big kitchen stove to be cleaned, and the fire irons. Well, if ever you've read Margaret Powell's book, that's typical of what we did in those days. That's
what
just
sort
how
of
we brought
family
up
were you with?
Well, first of all, I was a very nice family, but they had 2 sons, and these sons were always fighting and quarrelling. Oh, they were terrors. They used to come in with great big dirty boots on, and I used to clean the boots, you see. And I started off in the morning at 6 o'clock, and there was the fires to make the kitchen fire and all, clean the big kitchen stove and clean the flues and that sort of thing. And then, of course, you did so much work before breakfast and made the breakfast. And after breakfast was over, there was all the washing up to do. And then it was make the beds, do the bedrooms, do all the vegetables. And then you went down into the wash house and one day there was a big wash day, another day there was ironing. After tea, there was all the silver to be cleaned and hot water bottles to put in all the beds because there's no electric blankets in those days.
How many and servants did that family
only
have?
One where I first went. Well, then I went to a farmhouse where there was a farm, and I worked very hard there. We used to have children come to the door for milk, hope to separate, or a penny of new milk, or butter. And on a Tuesday, we used to churn and make the butter, perhaps the old-fashioned churns. Well, perhaps the butter would come within 20 minutes, or perhaps another week it would take 2 hours. It just depended, you see. Well, then when you'd made the butter, it was all patted up and taken into the market. On the Wednesday, it was taken into the market to be sold, along with eggs and chickens. And at Christmas time, you plucked an enormous amount of chickens, all ready for the market. And then after you'd done your housework, and I used to cook the lunch and that for the farmer when he came in, and in the afternoon I used to do my ironing and cleaning up. And then if I got an hour to spare, I'd go out into the barns and put the mangles in a great thing and twist it round. They all come out, cut up ready for the animals to feed, great big skipfuls to feed the animals with. And then I'd take the basket and go round and collect all the eggs, dozens of eggs, you know, and wash them and all ready for sale.
How much money did you earn?
A half a crown. The first one was 2 shillings a week, but at the farmhouse I had half a crown a week, yes, which was very good money. And of course I used to have to give mother 2 shillings, and I had 6 pence for myself, which when I look over the times, it was the right thing to do.
How far from home were you?
At that farmhouse I was only about 10 minutes walk, yes. But being up in the morning and scrubbing the steps, my hands were frozen and, you know, sort of thing. Well, then I left that and I came into town to work in the town. And while working, I was quite a considerable time there, and while working there, I picked up with a soldier, you see, a soldier boy. And, of course, when Mother first heard that I was a soldier, well, of course, we had good advice given us, which you did in those days, of course. And eventually, after a time, marriage came along, you know, we were thinking about getting married, and Mother said, well, that's up to you, she said. You make your bed, you have to lie on it. You know what it is if you marry a soldier, it's going to be a hard life for you, and if you make your bed, you must lie on it. Well, with from that day on, when I married, because my husband was much older than me, been in the First World War, and a soldier in those days, if he was over the age of 26 and he married, you went into married quarters. It was called getting married on the army strength. And you went into married quarters and you had all the privileges. You had the soldiers, your husband's rations twice a week, and you had a bucket of coal brought up to your quarters. And I think our pay in those days was £1 a week, 1 week for a soldier, and 30 shillings at the end of the month. And then we had 15 shillings at the end of the month called CRA, Community Ration Allowance. That was for the vegetables and that, because we used to draw the meat and bread from the ration stand, and then this was for the odds and ends sort of thing. And we managed beautifully. And we were in the depot at Bury St Edmunds then, and in the Saturday afternoon, we'd stroll down the town, and of course it always has been a market town, and you could get some 7 bloaters for 6 pence. You could coin the pork butcher and get a pound of pig's fry for 9 pence. You see, being on Saturday afternoon, I didn't keep it over the weekend. And huge bunches of bananas for 3 pence. They used to auction the things off and on. So really, we managed. We managed very well, as a matter of fact.
What had your husband done during the First World War?
Pardon?
What had your husband done during the First World War?
Well, I don't know too much about my husband, but I know he was stationed out in... He was in the First World War. And then at the end of the war, he was out in Russia. He came home, he was invalided at home from Russia. And that was before I was married, you see. But from our married life, we was in the depot at Bears and Evans, and so every Sunday morning it was lovely being a soldier's wife to get used to the bugle calls, you know, get up in the morning and cook out the store and all the different bugles. I got so used to them, it was a beautiful life. And our quarters, from our windows, you could see the big square, the troops all marching, parades, not in the square. And it was quite exciting. And every Sunday morning, they all went marching off to church, the band, led by the band. And the streets was lined up with people because they were so smart in those days. You see, they had the bright shiny buttons and white belts and white putties and a stick in their hands, so they shouldn't put their hands in the pocket. Always had to carry. I still have my soldier stick, my husband's soldier stick. And swinging their arms, and they always carried their rifle to church, you see. And all the people would parade there and watch this band. They looked so smart. And as they marched, they picked their feet up. They marched in step in those days. And as they picked their feet up, you could see the shiny studs in their boots. The sun shone on the studs in their boots. And they were a real credit. There's nothing like the British Army. Nothing. Not even today. The British Army, there's never been another country that beat the British Army.
What did people think of you as a soldier's wife?
Well, at first...
Did people tend to stay apart from you? Or did they admire you?
Well, in the country village, they says, well, you are brave, because, you know, you might have to go overseas, which eventually I did. You might have to go overseas. And what a hard life you're going to have in the army. And that sort of... all that sort of thing. But I didn't mind. I was young, and to me it was going to be a wonderful experience, because so funny, when I was a child, I can remember standing at the garden gate one Sunday evening, and from the church they were singing a hymn, or the chapel rather, they were singing a hymn, "From Greenland's icy mountains to India's coral strand." And I thought, oh, lovely, that must be. I imagined my childish mind. I imagined the blue skies, and what a wonderful place, oh, lovely, that would be. Well, of course, marrying a soldier, I thought, well, I've got all these wonderful opportunities lying in front of me. And so they said, well, I thought, I was going back in those days. In peacetime, a soldier was more or less looked down upon. But when there was a war on, he was a hero. They looked up to him. But always more or less, you know, to marry a soldier, he was sort of, well, I don't quite know how to put it. You sort of know in yourself if you married a soldier in those days. But anyway, I never looked back. I enjoyed every bit of my army life, every bit of it. Well, then, of course...
Was it before you were married that your husband changed his name?
Yes. Oh, yes. But anyway, there's no need to bring all that into it, is there?
He changed it back to Davidson.
Back to Davidson, yes. Because, you see, after he was discharged, after the war, he... Well, I think I've heard his mother say that he went into the army the day he was 16 in the band. And she signed a form. He was underage, but she signed because he was so keen on getting into the army. And he just loved it. And incidentally, on my husband's side, they're all army or navy, they're all that kind, all being, you know, country people, for the country, fighting for the country. And... I think she said he died up at Chelsea Barracks. But anyway, after the war, he came out and he was disabled and discharged. And he was so fed up. He so wanted to get back in the army. And he couldn't get... Every time he went for a medical, they turned him down. And so he thought, well, the only thing I can do is to go in a false name. So he went for his medical, and he was past fit, and he was in this false name. He went back in the army in his false name as a recruit. And, of course, when we was going to get married, he says, of course, my proper name, you see, is Davidson. And he explained why he was in this false name, you see. And, of course, mother, well, you're certainly not going to marry my daughter in a false name. And so he thought, well, no, he says, it's been on my mind for a long time, and I'll be straight about it, be above board. So he saw his commanding officer, whoever he has to see, and explained the case to him, and... They listened to him. They, instead of him, as he thought was going to be severely punished, the CO shook hands with him, admired him for him, and told him he'd take all his back service, which was a good few years' service, and his war medals, and pay that was to come to him, and he'd be acknowledged as an old soldier again, you see, which was very, very nice, because he felt very uneasy. You see, and besides, he was getting recruits' pay when he ought to have been getting his. But anyway, he had it back in a lump sum. So then we married, and we went into married quarters.
What were your quarters like?
Well, the first quarters we went into weren't all that good, because they was old-fashioned in those days. But, we
what,
really
what do you
can't
mean
complain.
By that? What sort
well,
of
the old-fashioned stoves. But we did have electric light. We did have electric light, and they supplied us with army beds, you know, and... as I say, we had the army rations coming in, and home was what you made. We had the army furniture, but we had our own curtains and knick-knacks about to make it homely, make it comfortable and nice, and I liked my army quarters. Well, then we moved on to Colchester. Colchester barracks were quite nice, were an improvement. And incidentally, my eldest daughter was born in Colchester Military Hospital. And I see on the news the other week that they talk about doing away with that hospital. It was the most beautiful hospital, wonderful hospital. Well, then after a time we moved, after our tour at Colchester, we moved to Hampshire, Aldershot in Hampshire. And my daughter then, she had bronchitis very bad. She was very ill there. And down there, there was a lot of pine trees, and I thought the air was a bit too strong for her. So after we'd been there a considerable time, we moved back to the depot. And after we'd been in the depot a time, my husband came in one morning, and he says, well, I've got to have another tour overseas now. My time has come round for a tour overseas. And so I said, well, where is it going to be? He said, to India. So I says, but what are we going to do? He said, well, you're coming along with me. I said, what about the children? Because I'd never travelled. And in those days, travelling the seas is not like the beautiful boats today. You went on troop ships in the olden days. You knew you was on the sea. But anyway, I thought it over, and I thought, well, whatever's going to happen to children's health and that sort of thing? What was my mother going to think? But anyway, I eventually got used to the idea we were going abroad, so I began to look forward to it. And of course, I was busy sewing, making summer clothes for the children and whatnot, getting preparing for it. And then, of course, we had to have inoculations and vaccination and inoculations and all that sort of thing. And then when the day